Hi. All right. We are here for Consciousness and the Absolute. And I'm going to begin with the January 7th message on page 33. Here we go. Questioner. Every time something happens now, instead of getting involved in it, I'm seeing that everything is that I am-ness. I am experiencing that. Nisargadatta says, witnessing takes place. There is nothing to be done. It is total freedom for one who does not identify with the body. The questioner says, everything is happening on its own, and I have no concern with it. Nisargadatta says, if that is so, it means that you have understood everything, and there is no need for you to linger here any longer. Questioner, and this is it says in the book, this is a different questioner. This is not the person that was just speaking, a different one. It is different for me. I have to make an effort not to get involved in thoughts when I meditate. Nisargadatta. It is the nature of the life force to express itself through thoughts and words, so they will keep coming. If you have to make an effort in the beginning not to get involved, make that effort until it becomes effortless. The questioner, does the Yanani have a mind and thoughts also? Nisargadatta, although thoughts come and go, the Yanani is not concerned. Thoughts will come in consciousness. Witnessing also takes place in consciousness. You must have the conviction that you are consciousness. Thereafter, there is nothing for you to do. Leave it to the consciousness to do what is done. Whatever happens, happens spontaneously. So this is interesting, of course. You know, I think a lot of people imagine that when one has awakened to the degree that Nisargadatta has awakened, that there are no thoughts at all, a completely silent mind. And Nisargadatta is saying that there are thoughts that come and go. It's just that the Yanani, the enlightened one, is not concerned about those thoughts. When I was reading the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, Ramana Maharshi seemed to indicate that it really depended. You know, that some Yananis have a silent mind, and some Yananis, some enlightened ones, still have a fairly active mind. He seemed to imply that it really wasn't the state of the mind, whether the mind was quiet or active. It wasn't the state of the mind that mattered. It was the identification. Are you identified with the mind? Are you identified with consciousness? Or maybe, are you identified with the absolute? We could say there are three choices there. But whether the mind was silent or not, it didn't seem to be a factor. It was the identification. I remember once I saw Muji. Muji said, I can mean many things. He says, you know, the devil says I, and God says I. The question is, where are you identified on that spectrum? You know, when you say I, what do you mean? Is it I, the body, I, the mind, or I, consciousness, or ultimately I, the absolute? So again, Nisargadatta says, although thoughts come and go, the Yanani is not concerned. Thoughts will come in consciousness. Witnessing also takes place in consciousness. You must have the conviction that you are consciousness. Now, this is also quite interesting. He says, witnessing takes place in consciousness. That's a different statement than consciousness witnesses. right? Witnessing takes place in consciousness, he says. And if you pay careful attention, you'll notice that you're aware of witnessing. Last night in Gentle Healing, I talked about the zoom in, zoom out game, remember? And I talked about, you know, like you can zoom in on a thought, zoom in on your mind and notice what your mind is saying, and then zoom out again and notice the entire environment. Notice and zoom out even further, notice only awareness. Zoom back in, be very focused on just the mind, right? Zoom out, become aware of your entire environment. Zoom out even further, become aware of awareness. But if you play these zoom in, zoom out games, another thing you might notice is you're aware of that entire process. You're aware of when attention is zoomed in. And you're also aware of when attention is zoomed way out, when attention even seems to dissolve into awareness, and there's just general awareness. You're aware of all of that, right? So all of that activity that typically we call witnessing, or we call the observer, you're aware of it, right? You're still one further back from it. Right now, if I ask you to look at your finger, you're aware that you're looking at your finger, right? If I ask you to close your eyes, you're aware that you cannot see anything. Your eyes are closed. If I ask you to open your eyes and look at something in the room, you're aware of that. You're aware that you're looking at something in the room. Notice that no matter what you do with attention, no matter where attention goes, you're aware of that. You're aware of the shifting and the changing of attention. So what is aware of whatever attention is doing? You're seeing attention. What is aware of that? Nisargadatta says you must have the conviction that you are consciousness. That would mean that you're not really the one looking at the finger. You're not really the one looking at something in the room. You're the consciousness that this action of looking at the finger, of looking at something in the room, you're the consciousness that that's happening within. And if you look very carefully, you can see that's true. Right, you can see all of that activity of shifting attention from one thing to another thing is happening within the consciousness that you are. And he says you must have the conviction that you are that consciousness. So for example, one thing that we sometimes say in our, you know, in our culture anyway, is I was lost in thought. I didn't hear you because I was lost in thought. What did you say? But if we look very carefully at that sentence, when we say I was lost in thought, we're putting our I with attention because attention was lost in thought. What Nisargadatta is saying is instead of putting your I there, you're the consciousness within which attention became lost in thought. And you have to have the conviction of where your eye goes. Attention was lost in thought. Not I was lost in thought. Attention was lost in thought. What saw that attention was lost in thought? What's aware? What knows that attention was lost in thought? Isn't that I? Right? So remember what Muji says. The devil says I. God says I. When you say I, where are you on that spectrum? And remember what Nisargadatta says. You must have the conviction that you are consciousness. You must have the conviction that you are consciousness. Thereafter, there is nothing for you to do. Leave it to the consciousness to do what is to be done. Whatever happens, happens spontaneously. You know, that's one of the reasons that I have always loved teaching. Even before I was on the spiritual path, when I was teaching in the corporate environment, I was probably the least prepared teacher in my organization. I would become mildly familiar with the material. I would do light highlighting here and there so that when I glance down while I'm teaching, my eyes would catch something. And then the teaching happens spontaneously. Every time. And of course, you know that that's still what happens. But what's really important about that is the noticing that the mind, the thinking mind, is not doing the teaching. That there is something else that can do. Right? And for some people, this something else, you know, does cooking, or this something else plays music, or this something else plays sports. Right? But we tend to think somehow the mind has to get involved for something to be done. We think thinking has to be involved for something to be done. And we place our eye there. I have to be involved, when we really mean mind. I have to be involved for something to get done. But what if we just have the conviction that we're consciousness? We're that in which all doing occurs. We're not the doer. We're that in which all doing occurs. We stay with that conviction. And then notice that the doing happens. This is what people, you'll often hear non-dual teachers say, you are not the doer. There is no doer. You know, this is what this means. It's keeping your eye with consciousness. The doing is happening in you. The body is moving in you. I mean, right now you can wave your hand and you can notice, if you pay attention, this hand is waving in you. If you see yourself as consciousness, this hand is waving in you. Can you see that? You are the consciousness in which all doing occurs. And this is where you want to keep your attention, keep your conviction. The questioner says, where is the seat of consciousness? Oh, I love this answer. Such a perfect answer. In every particle of the juice of the body. I think he could have just said in every particle of the body. I'm not sure why he had to say of the juice. Only the juicy parts, not the dry parts. In every particle of the juice of the body. In the scriptural books, it is normally given that there are various chakras. Those are available if you want to locate them like that, but according to me, it is throughout the body. I am 100% in agreement with Nisargadatta Maharaj on this. I have never been into the chakra thing. I've never been into, when it comes to the planet, the vortex thing. Because that's saying that some parts of the body or some places on the planet are more spiritual than others. How can that be if everything is made up of consciousness? How can one part of consciousness be more spiritual than another part of consciousness? How can my heart be more spiritual than my shoulder? Right? It can't be. Sometimes we have experiences, you know, like sometimes when I meditate, I'll feel tingling in my head, or I'll feel, you know, sometimes I feel, I call it a cross. I feel like starting with my heart, I feel it going all the way across my chest, all the way under my armpits, up into my throat, and down into my abdomen. It feels like a cross. But you know what? Maybe you don't. How many of you guys feel a cross? Right? You know, so if I make up a story that this feeling across is very, very holy, then guess what? You guys get to define yourselves as not holy. You know, these things are phenomenon, and the phenomenon is not the same with everyone. You know, I remember also when I was reading the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, there was a bit of an argument about where the seat of consciousness is, which is the question he's asking. Is the seat of consciousness in the third eye? Is the seat of consciousness in the heart? And where is this heart? Is it in the center of your chest? Is it on the left or the right side? Ramana actually said it was on the right side. You know, if I experience it anywhere, I experience it in the center. Some people experience it in their abdomen. You know, maybe these phenomena are just that because, you know, we all experience it a little differently because there isn't an actual physical location. Right? I used to, I don't anymore, but used to, my hands, the palms of my hands, when I first started the spiritual path, the first year or two, the palms of my hands would just light up. They don't do that anymore. Does that mean that I've lost something? You know, so we make beliefs out of, and you know, I love La Vida. I mean, there's just no doubt. I love La Vida. Every time here, I love La Vida. But to make up a story about there being a vortex here, it's making up a story. It's believing stuff. You know, maybe I just love it because it's beautiful. And I enjoy beauty. Maybe I just love it because it's a small town and I like small towns. Maybe I just love it because I'm supposed to, because this is what consciousness wants of me. Right? So I totally agree with him that the seat of consciousness is in every particle of the body. It isn't in a particular place. The questioner says, what is the difference between the body and consciousness? Nisargadatta says, I love Nisargadatta. He's so funny. What is the difference between sugar and sweetness? Again, the question was, what is the difference between the body and consciousness? Nisargadatta says, what is the difference between sugar and sweetness? The sweetness is there. And the sugar cane juice. Oh, the body has juice and the sugar cane has juice too. The sweetness is there in the sugar cane juice. In the body, the sweetness is the knowledge you are the consciousness. This knowingness is due to what? What is the prerequisite for consciousness? Well, before I go into looking at his answer, I want to talk about why I loved what is the difference between sugar and sweetness. When asked, what is the difference between the body and consciousness? You know, most of us identify with being the person, right? The body mind. And so we see the person as having consciousness. But the cells have consciousness too. Imagine for a moment that your eye is identified with one cell in your body. Are you any less consciousness as one cell in the body? And if one cell in the body is consciousness, then the entire body is consciousness. Right? When we talk about not being identified with the body, be identified with consciousness, we don't mean that the body isn't consciousness. It's completely made up of consciousness. But be identified with consciousness, which is more than the body, instead of being identified with the body. You see the difference? But the body is not some separate ego creation that is not consciousness. The ego interprets the body differently, but everything is made out of consciousness. Everything is consciousness. So to ask what's the difference between the body and consciousness, the true answer to that is there isn't a difference, right? But when I say I am only this body, I'm the one that's making the body different. I'm saying somehow the body is different than everything else because the body is me and everything else isn't. So the questioner goes, Nisargadatta says, what is the prerequisite for consciousness? The questioner says, is it the body? Nisargadatta says, the body is necessary to sustain consciousness. For the body to be, food is necessary, is it not? And the questioner says, yes. And Nisargadatta says, if the body does not remain, consciousness will not remain. In the absence of body and consciousness, what are you? That's a good question. It's a similar question to asking, what are you before you were conceived? Right? What are you before you are conceived? Now, some people like to just intellectually throw out the word consciousness. But the truth is, and somewhere in you, you know this. The truth is, before you were conceived, whatever you were not conscious in the way you are now. This consciousness that you experience now, which I often call human consciousness, is a part of being human. Therefore, it is related to the body directly. And, you know, we're all very attached to consciousness, this consciousness that we experience as humans. And we like to think that when the body dies, somehow this consciousness continues as a soul in some kind of an afterlife, right? But what Nisargadatta is saying is that this human consciousness that you experience as a human does not continue to exist beyond the human experience, nor did it exist before the human experience. And to be attached to this consciousness and say that this is the ultimate truth is not to transcend this and realize what is the ultimate truth. The ultimate truth, which existed prior to your humanness and continues to exist after your humanness. And it isn't your humanness. Right? And if the body does not remain, consciousness will not remain. In the absence of body and consciousness, what are you? The questioner says, I don't know. And we'll stop there because we are out of time. This message was a little longer than most of the messages. So I will be here next week in the evening time, Dawn, just not in the daytime. So next week when I come back, we'll just start, we'll maybe do a little tiny bit of a review, and then we'll continue with this message. And the next message is very long for this particular book. Most of these messages are so short, so we might also begin the next message, but you know, that message might take 2 or 3 weeks to get through. It's quite long. So thanks for coming, you guys. I know you're tired. I know this is late. So and it gets dark so early now. So thanks for coming anyway. Good night.